from Toronto, Canada, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. And away we go. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come warm yourself by the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. Now, first, of course, we must acknowledge this horrific shooting in Orlando at the Pulse nightclub. The worst mass shooting in American history left at least 50 dead and 50 more seriously injured. So needless to say, everyone here on The Conspiracy Show extending our deepest sympathies, our prayers to all of the victims, their families and friends. The shooter, it would appear, has had pledged his allegiance to ISIS. So once again, radical Islamic terrorism comes to the United States. Next week, former FBI agent John Guandalo will be here. Just in time, I suppose, to discuss, among other things, radical Islamic terrorism and the missing 28 pages from the 9/11 report and how the contents of those missing 28 pages might go a long way to keeping us safe. Victor Vigiani, the executive director of Zealand News Network, is here in studio. And historian Richard Dolan, the author of UFOs and the National Security State, Volumes 1 and 2, Standing By. Of course, we have the Alien Cosmic Expo coming up in Brantford on June 24th, 25th, and 26th. And I'll be moderating the disclosure hearing on Saturday morning of the 25th. We'll give you more details on that as the hour progresses. On one side, we will have noted UFO researchers and disclosure advocates, including the aforementioned Mr. Dolan, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, Stephen Bassett, Stanton Friedman, Grant Cameron, Travis Walton, and Nick Pope, who manned the UFO desk for the British Defense Department. They'll be presenting their best evidence before a panel of skeptical mainstream media journalists. This is going to be very interesting and very important. So go to aliencosmicexpo.com, aliencosmicexpo.com for more information. Albert Wenzel is here running our HOA, our Hangout on Air, and incidentally, if you'd like to stream us live on YouTube, just go to my Twitter feed, at Richard Serrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T, Richard Serrett, at Richard Serrett. Go to the top or near the top of the feed, and you'll find the tweet containing an HOA link. Big capital letters, HOA. Just click on it, and you are in, and you are streaming a radio program on YouTube. How cool is that? Intern Jonathan Franz is here tonight. It's crowded in here. It's like Operation Petticoat. We've got, like, six people in the studio here. And Ian Robertson, incidentally, our technical producer, is off. I think he's gigging around. I'm not sure where he's gigging, but he's taken his rockabilly band on the road. And so he's away, but in his stead, the fabulous, the young and talented Jamie is on the other side of the glass, and she is flying this ship. All right, let's get right to it. There's much to discuss. Victor Vigiani's research and analysis of anomalous aerial phenomenon spans over 30 years. His experience involves UFO sightings, report investigation, counseling work with individuals reporting anomalous experiences, presentations, and journalism in the field of ETI disclosure issues. His extensive UFO research has been completed throughout the southwestern United States in locations such as Groom Lake, Nevada, Corona, Roswell, and the Very Large Array Telescope in Socorro. White Sands, Los Alamos, on and on it goes. His published work includes Area 51, a Desert Journey Alien Abduction Symposium in Boston, Mass., and a review of alien abduction dialogue between Dr. John Mack and Bud Hopkins. Victor Vigiani, welcome very much to... Let me punch you in here. Victor, welcome to The Conspiracy Show. How
great
are you?
To be here. Great. Did I really do all that stuff?
No, I padded it.
You've confabulated. No, it's great to be with you, Rick. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. All right. Richard Dolan is among the world's leading researchers and historians of the UFO subject. He's the author of two volumes of history, as I mentioned, UFOs and the National Security State, Volumes 1 and 2, as well as an analysis of the future, AD, after disclosure, when the government finally reveals the truth about alien contact. He's appeared on many television television specials for the History Channel, Sci-Fi, BBC, and elsewhere. Since 2012, Richard has hosted the Richard Dolan Show, airing on KGRA Radio every Saturday evening from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern. In his books, articles, and many interviews, Richard has analyzed the destruction of our political liberties as a result of the UFO cover-up, the possible nature of the non-humans themselves, what their presence means for our civilization, why he believes the cover-up will end within our lifetime, and what is likely to happen after that. Richard has also completed another groundbreaking work, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. Richard Dolan, welcome to the Conspiracy Show once again. How are you?
Hi, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm always happy to be with you, and I want to give a greeting to my very good friend and colleague, Victor Vigiani.
Hi, Richard. Good to talk to you again.
A pleasure.
Let's just talk very briefly about the conference off the top, the Alien Cosmic Expo coming up June 24th, 25th, 26th, and specifically this hearing that will take place the morning of the 25th. You're going to be one of seven panelists presenting your best evidence. On the other side, we'll have some mainstream journalists, skeptical mainstream journalists, that we hope are going to give you the high hard one in terms of their questions. What are you hoping is going to come out of this? What is your best case scenario that'll come out of this hearing?
That's a good question. I think any time that those of us who are working this particular subject, that is the UFO reality, we deal with a very difficult medium. And this is not to give ourselves an excuse for not breaking through the wall of secrecy, but anyone who has done the bit of study of the structure of the corporate media complex realizes this has got a very, very close relationship with the structure of power itself. And, I've been looking at this now in the public realm for over 15 years, and it's tough. It's very difficult to get a hearing from mainstream journalists. Having said that, it is absolutely possible to construct a reasonable, rational case for, A, the reality of the phenomenon in terms of declassified military and intelligence community records, of which there's an overwhelming abundance, and then, B, to show the discrepancy. This is really, I think, one of the most jarring things in our society. Between that proven reality and the official expressions of disinterest, ridicule, and non-attention that has been the case really since the 1940s and exists right on through our day today. So in other words, what I will certainly be wanting to do to demonstrate to the members of the press is to show, on the one hand, expressions, official statements by the United States government and the Canadian government as well, about showing a lack of interest in this phenomenon, essentially dismissing it, when at the same time showing one declassified document after another that exhibit tremendous levels of concern and, and real perplexity over a phenomenon that does not to this day have a valid explanation in the conventional sense. I mean, we're talking about violations of sensitive airspace going back decades and generations of objects that quite simply, Richard, are not supposed to exist, and yet in report after report, in black and white, we've got them. And what we see are not only objects that are described as disc-shaped or described as flat on bottom and domed on top by 3- and 4-star generals, not only do we have documents by directors of scientific intelligence for the CIA to their boss, the director of the CIA, indicating that these are not explainable as natural phenomena or known types of aerial vehicles, and this is also true. But we have grave, grave matters of concern by air base commanders and naval installation commanders who were dealing with objects that are in their airspace that, frankly, just no one had an explanation for these things. And at the same time, the United States government particularly was telling the public that there was nothing to this phenomenon, that it's all hallucinations or misidentifications and so forth. So this is a discrepancy. Whatever the answer to the UFO mystery is, whether it's extraterrestrials or something even more bizarre, the reality is that, you know, if we as a society care about our public discourse, if we care that our governments are responsive to us in what is supposed to be a democracy in one form or another, or representative government, then what the heck is going on here? Why is it that we've just been unable consistently to get an answer? I think that there are reasons for this, and we can explore that, but I think just starting right off the bat, we have a discrepancy, and it's deeply significant, and I think for those of us who care about the nature of government, it's a bit disturbing.
Well, let's talk about the Fourth Estate, which is a major pillar of any democracy. They are supposed to be, you know, keeping an eye on the decision makers. How do we, or how do you explain or wrap your head around the mainstream media's willful ignorance, woeful reportage of this issue? Is it simply a matter of a cultural bias that journalists have?
No, it's much more than that.
Okay.
It's much more than that. I mean, actually, this is something that our friend Victor knows quite a bit about as well. We've talked about this. Go back to something known as Operation Mockingbird in the post-World War II era. And this is, for those who aren't familiar with it, it was a CIA operation of management of the mainstream media, intimate relationships with the Washington Post, New York Times, CBS, Reuters, Time Life, all of the majors back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And this all came out in the 1970s when it was discovered that there were at least 400 mainstream U.S. journalists that were on the CIA payroll covertly. Ask yourself, really, what you could do if you had 400 journalists covertly working for you. Could you influence editorial spin? Sure you could. Could you kill stories that were not amenable to your interests? Could you even plant fake stories? All of this happened through Mockingbird. Now, when that was exposed in the late 70s, the CIA, in a very lawyerly fashion, said, well, we don't do that type of relationship, you know, paid relationship with journalists. They're very careful with how they worded that. But what we have now in the 21st century is a situation so vastly beyond anything dreamed of in the Mockingbird years. So you've got not simply CIA, but military intelligence that has intimate relationships with journalists.
All right, Richard, I got to take a time out here.
Academic community.
All right, hold on. We'll come back. Richard Dolan is with us. UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, as well as AD After Disclosure, and of course his major two epic volumes, UFOs in the National Security State, Victor Vigiani, Zealand News Communications, with us as well. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
Different views make great conversation. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett.
Welcome back. Just a reminder, season four of my television program, The Conspiracy Show, season four debuts across Canada on Vision TV Monday, June the 27th. Write this down now. Monday, June the 27th, 9 p.m. Eastern. All right, that's season four, The Conspiracy Show across Canada, Vision TV, June 27th. That's a Monday, and it'll air every Monday until August the 1st, and that's at 9 p.m. Eastern. All right, we are back with Richard Dolan, and we, of course, have this big Alien Cosmic Expo coming up in Brantford, Ontario, the 24th, 25th, 26th of this month. Richard will be presenting his best evidence before a panel of journalists, along with six other panelists, including Stanton Friedman, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, Nick Pope, Travis Walton, Grant Cameron, and Stephen Bassett. Victor Vigiani is in studio from Zealand News Network. Let me throw it over to Victor.
Just before the break, Richard, you were talking about the capacity of the mainstream media to do what it's supposed to do. One of the things that I'm attempting to do with this inquiry, this first national inquiry on UFOs, is really point out, you know, with your help and the help of the other speakers, the devastating crisis of credibility that exists in the press to actually tell the truth and to lie to us or be part of the lie and the process of lies the government is engaged in with this. And when I say government, I don't mean those poor people sitting in the Parliament and in Congress, and they know little about this, but I'm talking about the backroom boys and how the whole system is geared towards a lying mentality, just non-truth. So can you picture in your mind the jaw-dropping information that you're going to be giving these journalists? And I'm sitting there right now, even imagining in my mind, listening to you say what you say about all the files you talked about, in general, seeing these things. Can you imagine the look on their faces and saying, no, this cannot be true?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
You're talking about some serious cognitive dissonance that does exist. You know, you think of it like 3 years ago, in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club, we had the very, very excellent citizen hearings on disclosure. It was for an entire week. Stephen Bassett, who will be here with us this week, in 2 weekends, organized that, and we were both part of that. I got to see firsthand the 6 retired members of U.S. Congress over the course of a week, and I saw how they transformed, absolutely transformed, from Monday till Friday. When they all came in, maybe one might have been partially sympathetic to the idea that maybe there was a UFO phenomenon. The other 5, absolutely not. By the end of the week, I can say definitively all 6 were really on board, and they were particularly on board by recognizing that this is a genuine reality that deserves a fair public hearing, because the evidence that they were presented with that week was simply overwhelming. And really, I think that this is exactly the kind of thing that you are organizing now in Brantford on the weekend of the 24th, 25th, 26th. And so my feeling is what professional journalists need to experience it. I wouldn't want to throw everything out at them all at once. Mm-hmm. I think for my purpose, it's important to demonstrate that there is this massive discrepancy that's actually quite fascinating. I mean, if for no other reason, I remember 20 years ago when I first started looking into this, learning that President Harry Truman began receiving quarterly briefings on the flying saucer phenomenon starting in the summer of 1948, and he received them every quarter for the remainder of his presidency, which went until the beginning of 1953. By my tally, that's anywhere from 16 to 18 briefings. Now, according to the man who gave those briefings, which was retired General Robert B. Landry, he said, well, we left no written record of the briefings. He did it in conjunction, he said, with CIA, and he was the Air Force liaison. My simple question is, that's an interesting fact, because Harry Truman was a busy man. He was president during the Korean War and a lot of other things that were going on, and yet he took the time out of his schedule every 3 months to receive a briefing from Air Force Intelligence and the CIA on, wait for it, UFOs. Now, are there any professional academic historians, any who are listening out there, who find that in the least bit interesting? Or the fact that the very first civilian UFO organization in the United States that got any real traction, known as NICAP, National Investigative Committee on Aerial Phenomena, their original board of directors included the very first director of the CIA, Roscoe Hillencoder, an admiral. He was on the board of NICAP. Are there any historians of the CIA who find that fact the least bit interesting? In other words, what I'm saying is that for professional journalists who may not believe that the UFO phenomenon is caused by extraterrestrials, they don't have to believe that. Are they at least curious enough to ask, what is the story behind these official documents that show grave interest? What is the story behind Harry Truman's briefings on flying saucers that went for 4.5 years? What is the story of why the first director of the CIA was a board member of NICAP, and in fact, why that man went before Congress in 1960 and said that there is this shroud of secrecy over the matter of flying saucers, which he did? I mean, these are just, if nothing else, they're just fascinating. And unless someone has just drained all of the curiosity out of their blood, I don't really see why someone wouldn't want to know about this. But when I was working on my doctoral dissertation in Cold War studies 22 years ago, I stumbled into this subject. And it was this jarring sense of what I and called back then a schizophrenic culture, you know, where there's official truth and then there's this unofficial truth. And it was that jarring sense to me that I simply was not able to let it go. I had to pursue it. Here I was studying the world of 1950 and the national security policy of President Truman, and suddenly I'm confronted with the likelihood, or at least the claim, that he was interested in the flying saucer phenomenon. Well, I needed to know that. I couldn't go through my life with this big question mark hanging over my head, and so I thought, well, I'll take a little bit of time to resolve that, and that was 22 years ago, and here I am. But I would think that anyone in professional journalism or in the academic world who's got some curiosity here, I'm just here to tell them there is a lot to chew on. And, you know, the problem, I guess I would say the challenge, is that this is a genuine mystery. This really is a mystery. This is a phenomenon that is elusive. And it's quite possible that we are dealing with something that engages us at the limits of our own perceptual abilities at times. I mean, we're intelligent creatures, but maybe we have our limits too. It's quite possible, at least I've speculated, that we are dealing with something that we really never may truly fully grasp in all of its enormity. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be trying.
Well, I suspect
there's something going on here. It's real and it's important.
When they hear your presentation, the journalists on the other side will be catching a few flies, as the old saying goes, with their mouths wide open. What are you going to give them to chew on? Let's talk about your presentation, UFO incursions, for example, into nuclear bases.
Well, this is something that has a long history. You know, we have documents that I prefer to go off of declassified, absolutely, you know, unarguable documents. I just feel like that's, in this type of a context, the safest way to go. So there are some of the key documents are not all nuclear. One that is very well known to UFO researchers, which still, sadly, is not well known enough to the rest of the world, is the famous Twining Memo from 1947 by Air Force General Nathan Twining, who later became a four-star general chief of staff of the U.S. Air Force. This is a very powerful man who, in answering a query from another general in 1947, stated point blank that this phenomenon of flying saucers was real, not visionary or fictitious. This other general had wanted to know, is this flying saucer thing anything that I need to deal with? And Twining was saying, yes, this is a real thing, and then described in remarkable detail the qualities of these objects as reported by military observers, including extreme rates of climb and maneuverability, action which must be considered evasive when sighted, metallic or light reflecting surface, absence of trail, circular or elliptical in shape, flat on bottom and domed on top. I ask, what is that in 1947, flat on bottom and domed on top? There are a number of other of these documents. One of the more interesting ones is an FBI memo from 1949, which describes a series of absolutely awe-inspiring violations of airspace that the FBI was monitoring over U.S. military installations. I mean, objects going, in one case, up to 27,000 miles per hour. This is in one of the memos. Another one traveling at an estimated speed of almost 3,000 miles per hour. These are absolutely beyond anything that was contemplated at the time. Over places like Los Alamos, where the United States, of course, one of the key places, developed the atomic bomb. Over places like Oak Ridge Nuclear Facility in the state of Tennessee. Over places like the Hanford Nuclear Plant in the state of Washington. My goodness, there was a document from 1950 dealing with the Hanford plant, which stated This is a classified memo at the time. No one knew about it at the time. It said objects round in form have been sighted over the Hanford plant. Air Force jets attempted interception with negative results. Fighter battalion squadrons have been alerted. The FBI has been alerted. Air Force intelligence has been alerted. Investigation is ongoing. And this is the kind of thing that we're talking about. And it just continues and on and on and on. So I think journalists need to understand is that while the United States government in particular was telling the world that all of this flying saucer nonsense was simply a case of mistaken identity, in reality, the classified world was dealing with a serious problem. And by the way, they were asking all the logical questions that you and I and listeners would ask, which was, did the Russians come up with something in their classified world? Did they invent flying saucers? This was asked actively. Another question that was asked is this something that we came up with in our clandestine military development program? And the fact is that as far as we can tell, no one said yes, this is the answer. Like, no one concluded that it was the Russians or the Americans or anyone else for that matter. The evidence just isn't there. So what you have is this true head-scratcher of a phenomenon. And again, to me, the real issue to start with, this is a phenomenon, the topic that takes you in step by step by step, like a flight of stairs into the basement. And we can start simply by asking, why this discrepancy? Why, on the one hand, ridicule and dismissal officially, at the same time, within the classified world, grave concern by objects that behave in an extraordinary way? We can speculate as to the answers. I don't think it's very difficult to understand. I mean, if you're a responsible military official or intelligence community official, and you've got this phenomenon that you're trying to deal with and you can't deal with it, maybe you just don't want to tell the world about what's going on because you don't really have good answers yourself, or the answers you have may be a bit too jarring and unsettling and indeed revolutionary for the society that you're in, and you just may decide that secrecy is paramount no matter what else, that secrecy on the subject must be kept. That's a real possibility, and in fact that's my working hypothesis, and I think that of many other people.
All right, we're going to head into a break here momentarily. Some interesting breakthroughs in 2016. In May, we had a reporter, part of the White House press corps, who actually asked a UFO question at a presidential press briefing.
That's right.
Recently, New York Times and Vanity Fair. Talking about John Podesta and his efforts to push the string in terms of UFO disclosure. They've mentioned the Rockefeller Initiative. I mean, these are major strides forward in the U.S. press. What will happen up here in Canada? We will find out, perhaps, June 24th, 25th, 26th at the Alien Cosmic Expo. Richard Dolan stays with us. Likewise, Victor Vigiani back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
Shaking the world and seeing what falls. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
Richard Dolan is with us, among the world's leading researchers and historians of the UFO subject, and his website is richarddolanpress.com, richarddolanpress.com. Victor Vigiani from Zealand News Network is here. Victor, how do we find your dispatches?
Well, you can go to any one of my two websites, Zealand Communications, just Google Zealand Communications, or you can actually Google Zealand Blogspot. That's where we have all of the press releases, so you can find all the information out there. Richard, I want to go back to something we started on earlier about the press, and it sort of ties in with the whole issue of, you know, where the nuclear visitations over Maelstrom and et cetera go. With that kind of really, damaging information, I remember watching the Boston Globe, the movie Spotlight, about how the Boston Globe came forward about the abuses of the Catholic Church, the priests and so on, and how it really didn't catch on to begin with because the story really wasn't that big, you know, it really didn't amount to much. But then eventually it landed up being, you know, one of the biggest stories the Boston Globe and the United States has ever dealt with. When we get to the point where a newspaper, any given newspaper, be it the New York Times, the Toronto Star, whatever, do you think, or do you see or feel that the same kind of angst that all the publishers went through in order to decide to go forward with this issue, let's say, let's call it the nuclear issue, or that's the UFO issue in general, do you see any possibility of a major media outlet actually, you know, the publisher sitting down in a room, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, say, "What the heck are we going to do with this news? Should we bust it open, or should we just, you know, toe the line and keep quiet?" How do you see that?
That's a really good question, Victor. I think we'll have a good chance of doing this if, and I'm speaking as a historian, so my tendency is to look at cases in the past, but I think it's very important that we as researchers stay up to date on current sightings that are actually very difficult and inexplicable. The fact is that they go on all the time. The two primary websites that collect contemporary UFO reports collect roughly 15,000 raw sightings per year in the U.S. and Canada alone. That's the National UFO Reporting Center and the MUFON website, and combined they between 10 and 15 every year, closer to 15. Of those 15, there are always a relatively small handful of absolutely spectacular cases. So I think it's important for us as researchers to keep this current and to emphasize to reporters and journalists that this is not something in the distant past. That's one thing. The other thing is that we as a society, I have noticed this. I think just below the surface of this culture that is still one of generally dismissal, at least in the mainstream, that there is a growing recognition that this subject is indeed quite serious, and witness the transformation even in the last 10 years from U.S. presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich, who in 2008 was really ridiculed out of the presidential race, partly because he was a UFO witness, despite the fact that he was a witness with two other people who vouched for him, and it was a heck of a good sighting in the early 1980s of a black triangle. But that didn't save him. He was out. And now, the New York Times did really what I can only describe as a puff piece on Hillary Clinton and UFOs just a month or so ago, in which they really didn't take her to task at all. Hillary Clinton had been on the Jimmy Kimmel show, just as Bill had and just as Barack Obama had, and Jimmy Kimmel asked each of those three individuals about UFOs. And Hillary, her campaign manager, of course, is John Podesta, who everyone knows is very interested in UFOs. Hillary not only stated that she would be interested, I mean, she really gave kind of a lame answer, to be honest with you. She would look into UFOs at Area 51, whatever even that means these days. But one significant thing she did was to correct his terminology and say, well, you don't call them UFOs. We call them UAP, unexplained aerial phenomena. And when she did that, what she was essentially saying to the world is, I know about this subject. I take it seriously enough to know some of the arcane nomenclature. That was significant. And, you know, in the aftermath of that, the New York Times handled her with that subject very much with kid gloves, I think primarily because the main American media has decided that they want Hillary to be president. They didn't want to embarrass her, but the fact is that they handled the subject very delicately and without ridicule, which you would expect. So there's a definite shift that is occurring, and it is because of 20 years of the web. It is because of 20 years of social media and people being able freely to exchange their opinions outside of a corporate media-dominated context. And because of that, it's becoming harder and harder to deny the fact that this is a subject that's got some cultural traction. And so what I can envision is just like, as you were starting off by talking about the Boston Globe's coverage of the Catholic Church, and how for the longest time this seemed like it would be a non-issue, a story that would just kind of die, right? And suddenly it blew up because people discovered that they cared. I believe absolutely that this is a subject that is waiting to explode. It has been waiting to explode for a long time. In my travels, whether I'm going to a conference about the subject of UFOs or just walking through life, you know, in my daily life, I can see that people actually are interested. They have a hunger. They don't always realize that they have a hunger for truth on this until they're confronted with it. So our job as responsible researchers is to present this evidence in as powerful a way as we can to the public to initiate that discourse. That's really been my life's work for the past 2 decades, is to present this phenomenon in the most responsible way to engage a skeptical but, let's say, intelligent public that wants to know, what is the evidence? Well, the fact is that there's a tremendous amount of it, and it demands an explanation in one way or another.
All right, and you will do that on the morning of June 25th at the Alien Cosmic Expo, Brantford, Ontario, when you will face off against a panel of mainstream journalists. When we come back, we will continue this discussion. Richard Dolan, UFO historian, Victor Vigiani, Executive Director, Zealand News Network. Stay with us.
Don't be afraid of the dark. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett.
Victor Vigiani in studio from Zealand News Network, and we are, of course, talking about the upcoming Alien Cosmic Expo in Brantford, June 24th, 25th, 26th. And, Richard, earlier in the hour, you were discussing the sort of the evolution of, the nature of the secrecy. You talked about Mockingbird and how, Carl Bernstein sort of hinted at that, or not didn't hint at it.
Yeah.
He blew the whistle on that in the Rolling Stone magazine in 1978. But since, now 40 years later, where are we? How do they manage to keep a lid on this now in terms of controlling the mainstream media?
It's actually more insidious now, honestly, than it was back in the 1970s. I hate to say it. You know, there are some very, very excellent media analysts who are worth listening to in the West. I'm a big fan of a fellow named Robert McChesney, for instance, always worth listening to. And there's many, many others who have really taken the time to analyze the structure of Western media and particularly its relationship to, the institution of power, whether it's Wall Street, financial power, or national security intelligence community power, and all of these are kind of an intertwined phenomenon, unfortunately. So what we have in the, just to give you one example, because information does seep out in various venues, and one was a story about the United States Pentagon spending $4 billion a year to manage its social image. Which includes, among other things, the paying of internet trolls, which they call sock puppets. So, all of those nice little articles that you read online, and there's all the comments below, and you see some that are really, truly obnoxious, and you wonder, I wonder if they're legitimate. Well, a lot of them are literally the creations of paid Pentagon employees, whose job is to insert their opinions below these articles and to persuade and to cajole and so forth. We're very lucky due to the revelations of people like Edward Snowden, who, in his efforts to get the truth out, demonstrated how the U.S. intelligence community uses propaganda at all levels, and British intelligence as well, including with, intimate relationships with the mainstream media. A lot of it's out in the open, though. There's almost a revolving door between the world of media, the world of Pentagon, the world of academia, the world of industry. They really all walk within the same circles. And so it's almost like the creation of this culture, an elite culture, in which, you know, we don't really have watchdog media so much as many have said, as a lapdog media. And I think that this is really not an inaccurate characterization. Now, I don't want to condemn the journalists who are going to be attending our event. I think, in fact, I want to welcome them and congratulate them, and maybe just challenge them to have a little bit of bravery to take a look at a subject that, once one scratches the surface, and I can say this from personal experience, you know, when I dove into the UFO phenomenon over 20 years ago, I too thought, oh goodness, I don't really want anyone to know that I'm studying this. Here I was working on Harry Truman's Cold War strategy, and now I'm looking at UFOs. What I discovered is that within the world of government, within the world of the military, and within the world of the intelligence community, I was actually, years ago, I was astonished to find people of brilliant intellectual levels and attainment, some, I would say, near genius levels, who were very well plugged in, indeed, who would quietly come up to me and say, yes, this type of research is very important and this is a serious subject. I will never, for the rest of my life, forget the conversations that I had with the recently deceased astronaut, Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon. Edgar Mitchell and I spoke. He told me on one occasion explicitly about his high-level meetings in which he had confirmed to him the existence of deep secret programs where alien technology and bodies were being studied. Edgar Mitchell said this to me, and he said it publicly a couple of times as well. So this is not the same as having proof, but this is a very prominent individual indeed. And I think, again, the media would be obligated to ask, why would Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell make such a claim? Why would, you know, other prominent generals and military officials over the years make similar claims? They actually go back through the years. I have a large collection of these quotes from high-level military and intelligence community officials.
That just keeps going and going. That being said, Rich, you talk to someone like Edgar, and I've spoken to him twice about the same issue in terms of how he was told. You take a look at a high-profile person like that, and someone like the Hillenkoetters from way back when, and even someone like Paul Hellyer now. There is this sort of national perspective on how we think this embargo of the truth or cover-up goes on, and how it's orchestrated. But there's also the international component of how other countries are choked. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, Mr. Putin, I think, knows about this. What would he think of? He said, "Well, let's just blow the whistle."
Well, I would say this. So there's roughly almost 200 separate sovereign nations on planet Earth. But of course, we have to recognize that nearly none of them have true sovereignty. Most of those nations are under direct U.S. domination, really quite overtly. So particularly when you look at military relationships, intelligence community relationships, when you look at the fact that the NSA monitors literally almost every single phone call from every national leader, and we know this for sure. There are exactly two significant nations that are outside the U.S. orbit, and that is Russia and China. There's Iran, there's a smaller nation, there's Syria, and there's North Korea, but really of major powerful nations, we're talking Russia and China. So all the other nations we can really dismiss in the sense that they are never, ever, ever going to act independently outside of what the U.S. wants. It is never going to happen. We could discuss this at length. The fact is that they are varying levels of what we can say vassal states or cooperative. Some of the more powerful nations like Britain have a closer relationship, but most of these nations have a much, and Canada as well, but most have a much more subservient role directly to the U.S. interests. They're just not going to step out of line. Now, Russia's different and China's different. Russia, it is conceivable because they clearly have had a long history of their own UFO encounters. They've had their own history of UFO crashes and apparent retrieval. They've had a long history of their own jets chasing these things. I mean, just as deep as what you get in U.S. and Canada and elsewhere. So the question is, would they disclose? Well, they, and also China, for this matter, face the same fundamental problem that the United States faces. So if they voluntarily disclose this reality, which undoubtedly they can do, my contention has always been that this is as upsetting and destabilizing to them as it would be to the U.S., if for no other reason than it fractures the dominant oil paradigm of energy on this planet. In other words, let's just say that Vladimir Putin were to go before the world tomorrow and say that this is real, UFOs are real. So it would take all of 5 minutes for people to realize, oh, these objects, whatever they're using to go from point A to point B, it's not petroleum. We can assume it's something better than fossil fuels. Whatever that answer is, whether it's the fabled, zero-point energy, or is it something like clean nuclear fusion, or whatever, it doesn't even matter. The key is that it will be out open on the table, that once we start looking into this, we realize that this is a real phenomenon. There's a source of energy that is beyond petroleum. So implicit in a post-disclosure world is a post-petroleum civilization, and that is probably one of the top two or three most radical revolutionary changes that would come about as a result of disclosure. It's a massive shift in the international structure of power. And I can't think that even that Russia and China would take it lightly. Certainly the United States would not take it lightly, which bases its entire economy on what is known as the petrodollar system. So well, they're just not going to change it.
Well, we are being being prepared, though, for that post hydrocarbon economy. We're being told in many jurisdictions we're not going to sell a gas cars past 2025. Is the nature of the embargo now about?
I see it.
but is the nature of the embargo now about managing a disclosure, or are they still?
Yes.
Is it about we're never going to give this up, or are they saying how
personally,
are we going to release it?
I think it's the former. I do believe. We're in a very radical revolutionary era of our history. There's no question about it. We're in the most radical period of change in human civilization ever. So I think it would be foolish for anyone at the top of our structure of power to think they're going to hang on forever to this secret. It's not going to happen. So yes, I think that there's a process of trying to manage this wild beast of disclosure in as positive a way as possible for their interests. Because an abrupt disclosure would be one of the most jarring things imaginable and could really cause some serious political repercussions, maybe justly so, but it would cause a huge disruption. So I can easily imagine that those people who are thinking about this, this may be why they encourage Hillary Clinton to essentially rebrand the UFO phenomenon into something called UAPs. Why is that? Because it's less value laden. You think of UFOs, you think of abductions, you think of conspiracies, you think of Area 51. UAP, not so much. So it's possible that there's a long-term plan, and I mean long-term, not this year, but maybe in the next decade or more, to rebrand this topic enough, while at the same time, further control is obtained over the global media nexus, so that if there's a disclosure moment that comes out, there may not be any competitions from other narratives.
All right,
I could see as a possibility.
All right, Richard, we'll have to end it there. But we will see you on the morning of June 25th, AlienCosmicExpo.com. For more information, RichardDolanPress.com. Thank you, Richard.
It was a pleasure.
Victor Vigiani, Zealand News Network, thank you.
As always, a pleasure.
All right, the website, strangeplanet.ca. Say hello on Twitter @RichardSerrett. Follow the truth.